Chapter 110. A meme for me, qui sur des resistor a lamer sur dos I a le render violent a durable. A less persons fables qui sont augers agatis de passions nen sont presque jamais veritable men remplis. La Rochefoucauld called. Among Deronda's letters the next morning was one from Hans Merrick of 4/4 pages, in the small, beautiful handwriting which ran in the Merrick family. My dear Deronda, in return for your sketch of Italian movements, and your view of the world's affairs generally, I may say that here at home the most judicious opinion going, as to the effects of present causes is that time will show. As to the present causes of past effects, it is now seen, that the late swindling telegrams account for the last year's cattle plague which is a refutation of philosophy falsely so called, and justifies the compensation to the farmers. My own idea, that a murrain will shortly break out in the commercial class, and that the cause will subsequently disclose itself in the ready sale of all rejected pictures, has been called an unsound use of analogy, but there are minds that will not hesitate to rob even the neglected painter of his solace. To my feeling there is great beauty in the conception that some bad judge might give a high price for my Baroness series, and that the men in the city would have already been punished for my ill-merited luck. Meanwhile I am consoling myself for your absence, by finding my advantage in it shining like Hesperus when Hyperion has departed, sitting with our Hebrew prophet, and making a study of his head, in the hours when he used to be occupied with you getting credit with him as a learned young Gentile, who would have been a Jew, if he could, and agreeing with him in the general principle, that whatever is best is for that reason Jewish. I never held it my forte, to be a severe reasoner, but I can see that, if whatever is best is A, and B happens to be best, B must be A, however little you might have expected it beforehand. On that principle I could see the force of a pamphlet I once read to prove that all good art was Protestant. However, our prophet is an uncommonly interesting sitter, a better model than Rembrandt had for his rabbi, and I never come away from him without a new discovery. For one thing, it is a constant wonder to me that, with all his fiery feeling for his race and their traditions, he is no straight-laced Jew, spitting after the word Christian, and enjoying the prospect that the Gentile mouth will water in vain for a slice of the roasted Leviathan, while Israel will be sending up plates for more, ad libitum. You perceive that my studies had taught me what to expect from the Orthodox Jew. I confess that I have always held lightly by your account of Mordecai, as apologetic, and merely part of your disposition, to make an antediluvian point of view lest you should do injustice to the megatherium. But now I have given ear to him in his proper person, I find him really a sort of philosophical, allegorical, mystical believer, and yet with a sharp dialectic point, so that any argumentative rattler of peas in a bladder might soon be pricked in silence by him. The mixture may be one of the Jewish prerogatives, for what I know. In fact, his mind seems so broad, that I find my own correct opinions lying in it quite commodiously, and how they are to be brought into agreement with the vast remainder is his affair, not mine. I leave it to him to settle our basis, never yet having seen a basis which is not a world-supporting elephant, more or less powerful and expensive to keep. My means will not allow me to keep a private elephant. I go into mystery instead, as cheaper and more lasting a sort of gas which is likely to be continually supplied by the decomposition of the elephants. And if I like the look of an opinion, I treat it civilly, without suspicious inquiries. I have quite a friendly feeling toward Mordecai's notion that a whole Christian is three-fourths a Jew, and that from the Alexandrian time downward the most comprehensive minds have been Jewish. For I think of pointing out to Mira that, Arabic and other incidents of life apart, there is really little difference between me and Maimonides. But I have lately been finding out that it is your shallow lover who can't help making a declaration. If Mira's ways were less distracting, and it were less of a heaven, to be in her presence and watch her. I must long ago have flung myself at her feet, and requested her to tell me, with less indirectness, whether she wished me to blow my brains out. I have a knack of hoping, which is as good as an estate in reversion, if one can keep from the temptation of turning it into certainty, which may spoil all. My hope wanders among the orchard blossoms, feels the warm snow falling on it through the sunshine, and is in doubt of nothing, but, catching sight of certainty in the distance, sees an ugly Janus-faced deity, with a dubious wink on the hither side of him, and turns quickly away. But you, with your supreme reasonableness, and self-nullification, and preparation for the worst, you know nothing about hope, that immortal, delicious maiden forever courted, forever propitious, whom fools have called deceitful, as if it were hope, that carried the cup of disappointment, whereas it is her deadly enemy, certainty, whom she only escapes by transformation.
You observe my new vein of allegory?
Seriously, however, I must be permitted to allege that truth will prevail, that prejudice will melt before it, that diversity, accompanied by merit, will make itself felt as fascination, and that no virtuous aspiration will be frustrated, all which, if I mistake not, are doctrines of the schools, and they imply that the Jewess I prefer will prefer me. Any blockhead can cite generalities, but the mind master discerns the particular cases they represent. I am less convinced that my society makes amends to Mordecai for your absence, but another substitute occasionally comes in the form of Jacob Cohen. It is worth while to catch our prophet's expression when he has that remarkable type of young Israel on his knee and pours forth some Semitic inspiration with a sublime look of melancholy patience and devoutness. Sometimes it occurs to Jacob that Hebrew will be more edifying to him if he stops his ears with his palms and imitates the venerable sounds as heard through that muffled medium. When Mordecai gently draws down the little fists and holds them fast, Jacob's features all take on an extraordinary activity, very much as if he was walking through a menagerie and trying to imitate every animal in turn, succeeding best with the owl and the peccary. But I dare say you have seen something of this. He treats me with the easiest familiarity, and seems in general to look at me as a second-hand Christian commodity, likely to come down in price, remarking on my disadvantages with a frankness which seems to imply some thoughts of future purchase. It is pretty, though, to see the change in him, if Mira happens to come in. He turns child suddenly. His age usually strikes one as being like the Israelitish garments in the desert, perhaps near 40, yet with an air of recent production. But, with Mira, he reminds me of the dogs that have been brought up by women, and remain manageable by them only. Still, the dog is fond of Mordecai too, and brings sugar plums to share with him, filling his own mouth to rather an embarrassing extent, and watching how Mordecai deals with a smaller supply. Judging from this modern Jacob at the age of 6, my astonishment is that his race has not bought us all up long ago, and pocketed our feebler generations in the form of stock and scrip, as so much slave property. There is one Jewess I should not mind being slave to. But I wish I did not imagine that Mira gets a little sadder, and tries all the while to hide it. It is natural enough, of course, while less he has to watch the slow death of this brother, whom as he has taken to worshipping with such looks of loving devoutness, that I am ready to wish myself in his place. For the rest, we are a little merrier than usual. Rex Gaskin, you remember a head you admired among my sketches, a fellow with a good upper lip, reading law, has got some rooms in town now not far off us, and has had a neat sister upper lip also good, staying with him the last fortnight. I have introduced them both to my mother and the girls, who have found out from Miss Gaskin that she is cousin to your Vandyke Duchess. I put the notes of exclamation to mark the surprise that the information at first produced on my feeble understanding. On reflection, I discovered that there was not the least ground for surprise, unless I had beforehand believed that nobody could be anybody's cousin without my knowing it. This sort of surprise, I take it, depends on a liveliness of the spine, with a more or less constant nullity of brain. There was a fellow I used to meet at Rome who was in an effervescence of surprise at contact with the simplest information. Tell him what he would, that you were fond of easy boots, he would always say, "No, are you?" with the same energy of wonder. The very fellow of whom Pastoral Brown wrote prophetically, "Wretch so empty, that if e'er there be in nature found the least vacuity, 'twill be in him." I have accounted for it all, he had a lively spine. However, this cousinship with the Duchess came out by chance one day, that Mira was with them at home, and they were talking about the Malingers. Apropos, I am getting so important that I have rival invitations. Gaskin wants me to go down with him to his father's rectory in August and see the country round there. But I think self-interest well understood will take me to Topping Abbey, for Sir Hugo has invited me, and proposes, God bless him for his rashness, that I should make a picture of his three daughters sitting on the bank, as he says, in the Gainsborough style. He came to my studio the other day, and recommended me to apply myself to portrait. Of course I know what that means. Why, good fellow, your attempts at the historic and poetic are simply pitiable. Your brush is just that of a successful portrait painter. It has a little truth, and a great facility in falsehood. Your idealism will never do for gods and goddesses and heroic story, but it may fetch a high price as flattery. Fate, my friend, has made you the hinder wheel road a posterior curse, a in ex secundo run behind, because you can't help it. What great effort it evidently costs our friends to give us these candid opinions. I have even known a man to take the trouble to call in order to tell me that I had irretrievably exposed my want of judgment in treating my subject, and that if I had asked him, he would have lent me his own judgment. Such was my ingratitude and my readiness at composition, that even while he was speaking I inwardly sketched a last judgment with that candid friend's physiognomy on the left. But all this is away from Sir Hugo, whose manner of implying that one's gifts are not of the highest order is so exceedingly good-natured and comfortable that I begin to feel it an advantage not to be among those poor fellows at the tip-top. And his kindness to me tastes all the better, because it comes out of his love for you, old boy. His chat is uncommonly amusing. By the way, he told me that the Irvandic Duchess is gone with her husband yachting to the Mediterranean. I bethink me that it is possible to land from a yacht, or to be taken onto a yacht from the land. Shall you by chance have an opportunity of continuing your theological discussion with the fair supralapsarian? I think you said her tenets were of that complexion? Is Duke Alfonso also theological? Perhaps an Arian who objects to triplicity. Stage direction. While D is reading, a profound scorn gathers in his face till at the last word he flings down the letter, grasps his coat collar in a statuesque attitude, and so remains with a look generally tremendous, throughout the following soliloquy, "O night, O blackness, etc., etc." Excuse the brevity of this letter. You are not used to more from me than a bare statement of facts, without comment or digression. One fact I have omitted, that the Klezmers on the eve of departure have behaved magnificently, shining forth as might be expected from the planets of genius and fortune in conjunction. Mira is rich with their oriental gifts. What luck it will be if you come back and present yourself at the Abbey while I am there. I am going to behave with consummate discretion and win golden opinions, but I shall run up to town now and then, just for a peep into Gad Eden. You see how far I have got in Hebrew lore up with my Lord Bolingbroke, who knew no Hebrew, but understood that sort of learning, and what is writ about it. If Mira commanded, I would go to a depth below the TRI literal roots. Already it makes no difference to me whether the points are there or not. But while her brother's life lasts, I suspect she would not listen to a lover, even one whose heir is like a flock of goats on Mount Gilead, and I flatter myself that few heads would bear that trying comparison better than mine.
so I stay with my hope among the orchard blossoms. Your devoted, Hans Meyrick. Some months before, this letter from Hans would have divided Deronda's thoughts irritatingly. Its romancing about Mira would have had an unpleasant edge, scarcely anointed with any commiseration for his friend's probable disappointment. But things had altered since March. Mira was no longer so critically placed with regard to the Meyricks, and Deronda's own position had been undergoing a change which had just been crowned by the revelation of his birth. The new opening toward the future, though he would not trust in any definite visions, inevitably shed new lights, and influenced his mood toward past and present. Hence, what Hans called his hope now seemed to Deronda not a mischievous unreasonableness which roused his indignation, but an unusually persistent bird dance of an extravagant fancy, and he would have felt quite able to pity any consequent suffering of his friends, if he had believed in the suffering as probable. But some of the busy thought filling that long day, which passed without his receiving any new summons from his mother, was given to the argument that Hans Meyrick's nature was not one in which love could strike the deep roots that turn disappointment into sorrow. It was too restless, too readily excitable by novelty, too ready to turn itself into imaginative material, and wear its grief as a fantastic costume. Already he is beginning to play at love. He is taking the whole affair as a comedy, said Deronda to himself. He knows very well that there is no chance for him. Just like him never opening his eyes on any possible objection I could have to receive his outpourings about Mira. Poor old Hans. If we were under a fiery hail together he would howl like a Greek, and if I did not howl too it would never occur to him that I was as badly off as he. And yet he is tender-hearted and affectionate in intention, and I can't say that he is not active in imagining what goes on in other people, but then he always imagines it to fit his own inclination. With this touch of causticity Deronda got rid of the slight heat at present raised by Hans's naive expansiveness. The nonsense about Gwendolyn, conveying the fact that she was gone yachting with her husband, only suggested a disturbing sequel to his own strange parting with her. But there was one sentence in the letter which raised a more immediate act of anxiety. Hans's suspicion of a hidden sadness in Mira was not in the direction of his wishes, and hence, instead of distrusting his observation here, Deronda began to conceive a cause for the sadness. Was it some event that had occurred during his absence, or only the growing fear of some event? Was it something, perhaps alterable, in the new position which had been made for her? Or had Mordecai, against his habitual resolve, communicated to her those peculiar cherished hopes about him, Deronda, and had her quickly sensitive nature been hurt by the discovery that her brother's will or tenacity of visionary conviction had acted coercively on their friendship, been hurt by the fear that there was more of pitying self-suppression than of equal regard in Deronda's relation to him? For amidst all Mira's quiet renunciation, the evident thirst of soul with which she received the tribute of equality implied a corresponding pain, if she found that, what as he had taken for a purely reverential regard toward her brother, had its mixture of condescension. In this last conjecture of Deronda's he was not wrong, as to the quality in Mira's nature on which he was founding the latent protest against the treatment as he had all her life being subject to until she met him. For that gratitude which would not let her pass by any notice of their acquaintance without insisting on the depth of her debt to him, took half its fervor from the keen comparison with what others had thought enough to render to her. Deronda's affinity in feeling enabled him to penetrate such secrets. But he was not near the truth in admitting the idea that Mordecai had broken his characteristic reticence. To no soul, but Deronda himself had yet breathed the history of their relation to each other, or his confidence about his friend's origin. It was not only that these subjects were for him too sacred to be spoken of without weighty reason, but that he had discerned Deronda's shrinking at any mention of his birth, and the severity of reserve which had hindered Mordecai from answering a question on a private affair of the Cohen family told, yet more strongly here. Ezra, how is it? Mira one day said to him, I'm continually going to speak to Mr. Deronda as if he were a Jew. He smiled at her quietly and said, I suppose it is because he treats us as if he were our brother. But he loves not to have the difference of birth dwelt upon. He has never lived with his parents, Mr. Hans says, continued Mira, to whom this was necessarily a question of interest about everyone for whom as he had a regard. Seek not to know such things from Mr. Hans, said Mordecai, gravely, laying his hand on her curls, as he was wont. W. What Daniel Deronda wishes us to know about himself is for him to tell us. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.